Welcome to Healthy Brain, Happy Body, a podcast from the Northeast Region Biofeedback Society. I'm Dr. Saul Rosenthal, the health psychologist in the Boston area, and your host as we investigate the incredible connections between brain and body. Today we bring you the second half of my discussion with Mayla Berger, an expert in the Ralph Method of Structural Integration, wellness coaching, emotional balancing, and other body-based interventions to help with trauma and improve health. She's the founder and director of the International Institute of Healing and Cultural Arts, which is focused on training neurosomatic integration to practitioners who are part of the BIPOC community. In this part of our conversation, we talked about the value of somatic therapies for trauma, particularly for members of the BIPOC community, and the necessity of training more BIPOC healthcare providers, which is the mission of Mayla's Institute. Before we get back to my conversation with Mayla Berger, a quick correction from last episode. Mayla talked about Frances Kress Welsling and said that she had taught at Harvard. In fact, she taught at Howard University. And now back to our conversation.
I'm trying very hard to put more BIPOC therapists out there.
I definitely wanted to talk with you about that. You have a training program.
Right. It's neurosomatic integration. I was a double major, psychology and dance. And through dance, I was sent to a Rolfer. And it's interesting. I was dancing with a white company, and I was sent to the Rolfer to get some of the black traits out of my body so I would fit better in with the company. And that turned out to be a gift, because the Rolfer was Dr. Edward Maupin, who was one of Ida Rolf's first students, and he pursued structural integration, Rolfing, as he was working at the Veterans Administration, looking for a body-centered modality to deal with PTSD. It wasn't called that then. This was in the 60s, but that's what it was. So I was very fortunate to fall into his umbrella, let's say. And I was 19 when I met him. And I still have a relationship with him. And through that experience, I was able to recover. I have an ACE score of 7.
So can you just describe what the ACE is?
Adverse childhood experiences.
Right.
So on the scale, it's looking at experiences that a child might have before 18 that would cause trauma. Mm-hmm. Did you grow up with both parents? Was one of your parents an alcoholic or both? Was anyone in prison? Was there violence? And they even have an extended version more now to include more traumatic experiences. But the point of this, of saying this, is I was extremely traumatized. I was suicidal. All of the things that you would expect with somebody who had a lot of adverse childhood experience. And it's because I had, from such an early age, this experience, it was a lifestyle of structural integration to get me in touch at a young age with my self-energy, with my sense of self, to start my healing so young. So I am a great advocate of structural integration. I don't know that I would be where I am now if I hadn't had that experience. That's not the only modality I studied, but it was certainly my starting point. I also know that in the BIPOC community, secrets are huge. I mean, that came out of preservation of life. You had to keep secrets. You know, it's really hard to think that my grandmother had to prepare my mother to be raped because the inevitability was so high. And to understand that these are the realities of these communities. And I'm not the only one. There are people who have written about this so that you can have a vicarious experience of what it is to grow up a small Black child, you know. Mm-hmm. And it crosses economic barriers, because I grew up in an upper middle class environment. My parents were very educated, but then to understand that education is one of the top ways to cope with trauma. And fortunately, there's a lot written by Black intellectuals about the subject. Some stuff will turn your stomach, but it's true. It happened. And it's important to know it happened. For example, there is a book out called The Delectable Negro. Very highly researched. I'm not going to go into it in great detail, but you can find it on Amazon. And it's discussing the fact that those lynchings that were happening in my mother's lifetime, those postcards, I don't know if you've ever seen the lynching postcards. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, they had barbecues after them. So you can only imagine. This is stuff that is a reality and in ourselves. This is intergenerational trauma. This is what we as BIPOC people fear. I mean, even when I was in therapy as a child, the only therapists available were white, and it was essential that I have therapy. But before I went, my mother would caution me that this is a white man you're talking to. Be careful.
Let's talk about what you're doing with your training. So you're trying to train more BIPOC therapists, particularly in structural integration.
Well, it's twofold. It's structural integration and the neurobiology of trauma. So the structural integration happens in 10 sessions. It goes systematically through the body. And in our class, what we're doing is looking at the emotional correlative to these areas of the body and understanding how the brain works, what the messages are going back and forth from the brain, the vagus nerve, to the kidneys, the adrenals, how it all connects. So we're really looking deeply at the brain-body connection. For example, we start with the breath to settle the vagus nerve, understanding that trauma is held in the body and the best way to get it released is to relax, have a relaxed muscle body to be able to release the trauma that's held in the body via a contraction. So as we're systematically going through the body, we're encountering those places where the trauma is held as a contraction. And those are the parts of IFS. Also being aware of how trauma affects the brain. So we're using structural integration, a body-centered modality, as biofeedback. That the best way to release trauma is nonverbal, so that we contact the contraction, we contact the feeling, and we're able to change the experience by getting the release of the fascia where the trauma is stored. Is that making sense?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. As someone who does a lot of somatic work, it makes a lot of sense. And I guess, you know, as you're talking, I'm wondering about, is there a particular role that this type of, you know, structural integration, somatic types of therapy has to play in the BIPOC communities?
Absolutely it does. Because as I mentioned, it's a culture of secrets. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about a community that is not readily going to come and see a talk therapist. But lucky for them, talk therapy is not the best way to resolve trauma. So this is a way to reach the BIPOC community that isn't going to repel them. It's not going to be repugnant. As I said, I'm working with returning citizens coming out of prison, and they're learning to talk. It's not to say that talking doesn't help, but they're really willing to get on my table and be touched. More willing to do that than to talk. Touch is really powerful, and it transcends the fear. I can transmit my love for them with my attention and intention in the touch, non-verbally. I mean, it's not to say we don't talk at all in our sessions, but the gist of the work is internal and finding the breath to be able to release the contraction of fear. And I've been doing this work a long time, 50 years now. There are patterns that you can identify that associate with different experiences. For example, I can see the rape reflex. I can see where people have been raped. And that's a good thing because I don't have to say, oh, you were raped. I can work on those areas and get the release and understand what is held there and support that without invading their secret. You know, I don't have to touch the wound. I can deal with the managers, so to speak.
Right, right. Not the firefighters.
Right.
So this actually, in my head, goes back to where we sort of started this conversation, is how do you make deeper connections with these folks, with folks in the BIPOC communities? And you're particularly bringing in BIPOC therapists to train. Right. Is there something unique about having BIPOC therapists working with BIPOC patients? It sounds like a very simplistic, naive question.
Sure, there is.
I'm curious.
Even in my class, because I'm the only BIPOC instructor, I'm working with two white instructors who are also second generation. I don't have a lot to choose from. So within the class itself, we're dealing with those trust issues. Mm-hmm. We're processing that in training these future therapists. Each and every one of them has been affected by the crack epidemic in very tragic ways. So they are in a place where they can process and see and are willing to look at their resistance to working with a white therapist. And as I said before, he's at a disadvantage, or they are, they can empathize, but I have been through what they have been through. So there's an implicit trust with me that they don't have with the white teacher. We have to work with accepting the valuable lessons he has to teach as a white man. He wrote the textbook. It's like, can we let go of our fears and considerations and not hate him as a white man long enough to be able to receive what he has to give us? But, you know, understanding that these scars are deep. You know, when you're looking at the truth about the crack epidemic,
mm-hmm.
And then opening yourself up in deep places, this is deep work. It takes a little bit of work to get trust into the room. And I'm not so sure it would be as successful as it is if I weren't in the room.
Sure.
Or somebody like me in the room.
So it's obvious we need many more BIPOC mm-hmm. therapists at every level. I can't remember quite with, you know, as a psychologist, I can't remember exactly what the percentages are, but they're tiny. So what do you need? What does your program need to
Well, my program needs money. Okay. The program is solid. Each of us have over 20 years in our experience. My experience has been more catered to this. I used to work with gangs in Chicago, and I've been in the nitty gritty, the ground floor. I look forward to these, to my cohort, because they have what it takes to really work with the community and spread this. I need I want to get this group going, because I'm getting old. I don't have that many more years to be able to do what I do. So it's a program that's moving around the country. So it's looking at even the different paradigms within the BIPOC community, because we're not all the same, contrary to popular belief.
Right.
To be able to share what we do so that it has a wide reach. The program has already started. I'm limping along with the funding that I have, which is insufficient. I need money. It's as simple as that. And it's not that much money either.
Well, look, I will certainly, we'll put links to the program and to ways that folks can support. And also, hopefully those who come to your talk will also be brought in, because I think it's an incredibly important piece of work that you're doing, and so necessary within our community, our society.
I agree. Obviously.
Obviously, yeah. So Mayla, I really want to thank you so much for coming to talk with me on Healthy Brain, Happy Body. And I'm hoping that people will listen and get as involved as you need them to be.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to speak about it. And I hope that we get to see each other in person. You come down to Barbados for my anti-ism retreat.
I may do that.
Okay. Yeah,
certainly there's a lot of reasons, not just that it's Barbados, but just the idea of working with you. I've really enjoyed talking with you. So it'd be nice to work together.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks for joining us on Healthy Brain, Happy Body. You can register for Mayla's webinar, along with all the webinars and recordings of webinars NRBS offers, following the links in the show notes or by going to nrbs.org. Subscribe to this podcast by clicking the subscribe here link or wherever you get your podcasts. If you enjoy the podcast, please subscribe, rate us, and leave reviews at Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Reviews help us to get more listeners, and that's more people who can learn about and benefit from biofeedback, neurofeedback, and other mind-body approaches to health. And let us know what you think by sending us email. Our address is healthybrain@nrbs.org. Healthy Brain, Happy Body is produced and edited by me. The theme music is Catch It by Coma Media. It is the production of the Northeast Region Biofeedback Society. Go to nrbs.org to find out more about the organization, including our trainings, monthly webinars, and yearly conference. All opinions expressed are those of our guests and not the NRBS. This podcast is not meant to replace advice from qualified healthcare providers. Healthy Brain, Happy Body is supported by the sponsors of NRBS and by the International Society for Neuroregulation and Research. Be sure to join us on our next episode as we continue to explore the keys to our well-being on Healthy Brain, Happy Body.